How about some questions or comments? Yes, in the back there. Speak loudly, okay?
Three questions.
One at a time, okay?
First question is, you mentioned that there's no real soul, but there's a rebirth is possible. Can you please explain or elaborate?
If I could explain that more, how there's no soul, even though rebirth is possible. Okay, so like I said, if there were a soul, rebirth would be impossible. Because if something is fixed and permanent, it cannot change. Yeah, and one life is different from the next life, which indicates that change has occurred. Okay, if we had a fixed soul, we would always be thinking the same thing. We don't. We change. Okay, it's like the analogy of a river. I like this analogy very much of a river. Yeah, when you look at the river, and I, you know, the Singapore River isn't, I can't really use it because it's kind of dry most of the time. So just bear with me and think of the Mississippi River, okay? You've all heard of the Mississippi. So it's a big river. Yeah. Now, we say Mississippi as if it's one thing. Yeah, right? But if we analyze and we investigate what is the Mississippi River, can we find one thing that is the essence of the Mississippi River? What are we going to point to? Do we point to the banks of the river? Are they the river? Is the bottom silt at the bottom of the river, is that the river? Is the water the river? Is all of this upstream the river? Or how about downstream? It's very different upstream than downstream, isn't it? Which one's really the river? If downstream's the river, upstream can't be the Mississippi. If upstream's the Mississippi, downstream can't be. Because if it's fixed and permanent, like having a fixed permanent soul, it can't be both. Because upstream is different from downstream. And the banks are different than the silt at the bottom, and that's different from the water. And it's different when it's flowing along smoothly, and it's different when it's going down a waterfall. Okay? So even though when we look and investigate, we cannot find one thing that we can draw a line around and say, this is the essence of the Mississippi, when we don't analyze and investigate, and we just look as a whole, we've all agreed that this thing that has some kind of continuity we call the Mississippi. Okay? So it's similar with the mind stream. Yeah? There isn't one thing that we can draw a circle around and say, this is me. This is the essence of me. And this soul goes from one life to the next life. But it's more that there's this continuity of clarity and awareness that keeps changing moment by moment by moment. And it's not the same in earlier moments as it is in later moments. And that's why rebirth can occur, because change occurs. Okay. But there's no soul that gets reborn. Okay. Okay. So there's a question that when, for people, this was asked by somebody practicing in the Tibetan tradition, that when our teacher dies, do we automatically accept the next life, or who is recognized as the next life as our teacher, of our teacher, as our teacher? Okay? No, you don't automatically have to recognize the next life as your teacher. And in fact, I think it's better that you kind of stand back and you watch the child as he or she grows up. And you see, you know, about your connection with the child. You see if they become a great master like the previous one. Okay? So you don't automatically have to accept the next life also as your teacher. You know, each time we should investigate. I mean, the Buddha said we should investigate the qualities of a teacher before we accept them and not just do things on blind faith. Okay, so somebody's saying, I'm often asked, where is your God in Buddhism? And Buddha said, he's not a God. There is no God in Buddhism. And who said there needs to be a God? Yeah? You could just as easily ask somebody, where's Buddha in your religion? Yeah? How come your religion doesn't talk about Buddha? Where's the Buddha in your religion? Yeah? No, we don't believe in a God. Now, but it's also very interesting because if you ask people who believe in God, every single one of them has a different definition of God. Okay? And people who do deep contemplation in other religions, very often what they call God has a lot of similarities to what we call, you know, emptiness or Buddha. Okay? So, and then, there's some qualities that Buddhists believe in that correspond with some qualities some people ascribe to a God. Okay? So if we talk about love and compassion, the principles of love and compassion, and you'll find that many Christian contemplatives, for them, God is not some guy in the sky, you know, with a white beard, but for them, God just means love and compassion. Yeah. Well, Buddhists, we believe in love and compassion too. We don't give it the name God, but, you know, we believe in love and compassion. If you're talking about beings who are more spiritually advanced than us, yes, Buddhists, we believe that there are other beings who are wiser and more compassionate than us. We call them arhats and bodhisattvas and Buddhists. Okay. If you talk about God as being a creator of the universe, Buddhism doesn't have anything like that. Because like I said before, we think it's impossible for there to be a creator of the universe. Because if there were the creator, yeah, then the beginning wasn't the beginning because the creator lived before the beginning. And if there's nothing, why in the world did the creator create? Yeah, I mean, this was my question long before I even knew anything about Buddhism. Yeah, because I was raised believing in a God. And I kept on looking around because I grew up during the Vietnam War and racial riots and everything. And I'm going, if God created things, he really blew it. You know? There's so much suffering in the world. Why in the world did God create suffering? And when I asked people this question, they said, well, God created suffering so we could learn. And I said, well, if God was the creator, why didn't he create us more intelligent so we didn't need to suffer in order to learn? You know, I could not find any answer that satisfied me in this regard. Okay? So I am not criticizing people who believe in God because everybody has their own belief and it's good that there's a variety of religions so everybody can find what feels comfortable for them. But what I'm doing is just explaining a Buddhist view and how we use reason to, you know, ascertain what exists and what doesn't exist. Okay? I do a lot of interreligious dialogue. Yeah, and especially with Catholics, Catholic nuns, Buddhist nuns and Catholic nuns get along very well. We understand each other well. Okay, the monks all talk theology, you know. I've been at interreligious dialogue with the monks, and they're all up there, you know, well, my religion, the scriptures. The women, when we get together, we don't do any of that, okay? I hope no monks are listening. But we talk about practice and we talk about what it's like to live a life that's dedicated to spiritual practice. And we talk about how do you balance your inward meditation with your service to the community. Okay, so we have lots of interesting discussions. But I find when I talk with the Christian nuns, you know, many of them, their idea of what they call God, like I said, isn't some person, but applies to, you know, love and compassion, or even to emptiness, selflessness. Okay? Now I got to take my glasses out for some of these questions. When you get older, you discover that they shrink the size of the letters every year. Okay, can you explain how it's possible that after we have evolved to the stage of a complex and intelligent being, we can still return to be reborn as a simple creature like an ant? For example, if we have a tertiary education, how can our knowledge return to elementary level? Please convince me. You bet I will. If we use the example, you have a tertiary education, how can it go to an elementary school, an elementary education? How many of you have been around elderly people who are demented or suffer from Alzheimer's? Yeah? How many of you have watched your parents become forgetful and become almost like a child? They can't even remember who you are. You know, somebody who was once very intelligent, very wise, who had so much information, then all of a sudden, you know, they get old, it's gone. Okay, it happens, doesn't it, even in this lifetime? So in the same way, we can be very complex creatures now, but if we have the seeds of negative karma in our mind stream and we are attracted to be reborn in a certain kind of body in the future, then we're also limited by the nervous system structure of that body that we're reborn into in the future. So it's like the intelligent capacity of the mind goes into hibernation during that lifetime. Okay? Did I convince you? Oh, yes.
I would like to know, since you mentioned a theory about God and that it's not possible because they must start from somewhere, there's no beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, then in Buddhism, then when you reach nirvana, mm-hmm. there's also no end. But
right.
to come to imply that there's an end because it's out of cyclical birth.
What ends is cyclic existence.
So,
the continuity of consciousness does not end.
So where does it exist then now? You know, this mind that is nirvana.
But I said that the mind, he's asking where the mind exists in nirvana. The mind, remember, is not made of atoms and molecules. So it doesn't have to exist in a physical place. It's not like you go three clouds up and turn right. Okay? Yeah? Because the mind isn't atomic in nature. It doesn't need to be in a certain place to be in nirvana. Nirvana is a mental state. Okay? Okay, who has better karma? A pet in a well-cared-for home by a well-to-do family, or a human being suffering hunger and poverty? Okay? If the animal has better karma, then why isn't it born in the higher human realm? Okay, now remember I said that our mind streams can have many different seeds, but only some of them ripen each lifetime. Okay, some of the seeds ripen in terms of the body and the realm that we're reborn in. Other seeds ripen in terms of the conditions that we have in our life. So somebody who is reborn as an animal, when you're reborn in what's called an unfortunate rebirth like that, that's a result of not keeping good ethical discipline. Of having, you know, there's some negative karma that ripened that made their mind attracted to be reborn as an animal. There's some, if they're in a well-cared for home, I have two cats, they're very spoiled, okay? they have lots to eat. The fact that they have lots to eat is a result of having been generous in a previous life. Because when you give, you know, then you also receive. It's, you know, it's karma. So they are experiencing the fruition of one, of a negative karma that threw them into a cat rebirth, but some positive karma that allows them to be in a well cared for good home. Okay? A human being who's living in poverty, they're a human being as a result of having kept good ethical discipline in the past. And so some positive karma is ripening that makes them attracted to a human body, but they're temporarily living in that state of poverty, maybe because in a previous life they were a soldier who took the food away from the inhabitants of the country they invaded. Or maybe they were a politician who prevented the distribution of food to the people in the country. So therefore they experienced the result of poverty. Okay? So we can't say who's more fortunate because it's all going to change anyway. Okay? In terms of who has the better possibility to practice Dharma in that life, you still have to say the human being, because when you have a human body and human intelligence, it's possible to practice. You know, it's, you can still hear the teachings and try and practice. I try and explain to my cats about the precepts and loving kindness, and they just look at me and go, you know, feed me. Yeah, that's all they care about. Yeah. Okay. Dear Venerable, since there is no beginning, where are minds before the six realms, such as human beings and animals, started? Again, there was no beginning to the six realms. Yeah. And the six realms are not places. The six realms are also states of mind. And the six realms existed beginninglessly. And when we talk about the human realm, you know, there's human beings on our particular planet Earth. But there could be human beings that don't necessarily look exactly like us, you know, in different places in this universe. I mean, this universe is really big. Yeah. We look at these stars that look like tiny dots, and they're much bigger than our planet. Okay, so there's lots of room out there for other life forms. When in the state of nirvana, does it mean that there isn't any changes? Okay. In the state of nirvana, okay, there's still the continuity of mind, but the mind has been freed from the ignorance, attachment, and anger that bind it in cyclic existence. And that mind is focused in single-pointed meditation with the wisdom that realizes emptiness. Okay. So, mind always changes moment to moment, okay? But what the mind is focused on, emptiness, is something that's unconditioned, that doesn't change moment by moment. And there's never any reason to fall out of nirvana, because once you've eliminated ignorance, there's no way to become ignorant again. Once you've eliminated ignorance from the root. If you've only eliminated superficial levels of ignorance, the seeds are still there and it can come again. It's like chopping a weed off part way. The roots are still there. It's going to grow again. But if you uproot it, it can't grow again. So that's why we have to develop the wisdom that realizes emptiness, that can uproot the ignorance. How about spirits and ghosts? Why do they exist if mind is awareness and not soul? Spirits and ghosts can exist. They're included in the hungry ghost realm. But somebody who has, you know, who due to karma is reborn as a spirit or a ghost, they're only born like that until that karmic energy ceases. Then they die from that realm and they get reborn in another realm. Just as our life isn't, you know, doesn't last forever, rebirth in any of the realms doesn't last forever. So things keep changing. Is it possible for one mind stream to be reborn into two beings or more? In our ignorant stage, no. Okay, one mind stream, one being. And at, when people gain great meditative powers, the great bodhisattvas who have single-pointed concentration on the nature of reality, who have great compassion and bodhicitta for all beings, they can manifest in many different forms at one time. But that's due to their meditative ability. If I would like to help my pet dog be reborn in a higher rebirth to learn about the Dharma, how can I help? Now, just substitute mother for that. If I want to help my mother get reborn in a higher rebirth. Yeah. Okay. It doesn't matter whether it's our mother or our pet dog or, you know, the stranger walking on the street. It's a living being. Okay, we want to help it have a good rebirth. So, in the case of animals, it's more difficult for them to learn the Dharma. So what you do is you do your chanting out loud so that they hear. You read your Buddhist sutras out loud so that they hear it, like plants little seeds on their mind stream. You can walk with them around stupas or pagodas or show them pictures of the Buddha. It's just things that put a good memory trace on their mind stream. And people say, well, how does that work? Well, you know how people do, you know, the sneaky advertisers, how you'll be watching a movie and in a split second they'll flash drink Coca-Cola and then without you even knowing it, you get that imprint and you want to go buy a Coke. You know, sneaky advertisers. Okay. It's in the same way, an animal, you know, it's like putting those imprints subliminally on their mind stream so they can ripen in the future. In terms of a human being, you have a much better chance of helping your mother or your brother or your sister or, you know, your husband or wife because they actually can understand. And so you try and, you know, teach them about non-harmfulness, teach them about having a kind heart. Yeah. When you're trying to help people in a spiritual way, you don't need to pull out all your Buddhist books and start rattling off Sanskrit and Pali terminology. Okay? Because some people, they're going to be turned off about that. You know, hey, mom and dad, there's Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, Nirvana, Shunyata, you know, Karma. I mean, they're going to go, huh? Okay? But you start off and you talk about non-harmfulness and, you know, refraining from harming others physical, refraining from stealing, refraining from unwise sexual behavior. You start talking about using our speech in wise and kind ways and not deceiving and lying and backbiting. Yeah. You talk about ways to calm anger, you know, ways to become more generous and less stingy. These kinds of things everybody can relate to. And then from there, you know, when they find some benefit from that, then they can begin to learn some of the other things. Okay? We'll have one last question here. If a Rinpoche tells you about your past life, do you believe him? I have no idea. But that's up to you. Same thing if a fortune teller tells you about your past life. Do you believe it? I have no idea. You can make up your own mind what you believe. You know? I have no idea. In any case, I do not think it really matters who we were in our past life. Because if you look in the broad perspective of all of cyclic existence, we've all been born in all six realms repeatedly. Okay? So I think it's much more important what we do this lifetime. Yeah? How we practice this lifetime. I mean, you meet all these people who go, oh, you know, have you ever noticed how many people remember being Cleopatra? You know, if there was one Cleopatra and all these people think that they were her in her previous life. You know, or I was, you know, some great spiritual master in my previous life, or I was, you know, this or that in my previous life. That's all very nice, but what are you doing this lifetime? Okay. If you're going around drinking and criticizing people and, you know, you're just out to get money, it doesn't really matter who you were in your previous lifetime. Okay, we have to practice this lifetime, cultivate this lifetime. Okay? Last question, okay.
Earlier you mentioned that we should create a seed, so that we should plant a seed and create the conditions for right birth next life.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean whatever knowledge we acquire this lifetime can be brought forward to the next birth? If that's the case, why do we need to?
Yeah. So does it mean that whatever we learned in the past lives is brought forward? No. We have bad memories. Like I told you, I can't even remember what I studied in university. And they gave me a degree in it. I can't tell you anything. Okay? Yeah? So it doesn't mean that everything's brought forward. You know, there might be some seeds or predispositions to learn that material more rapidly or to be more interested in that material than in other things, but you don't, you know, come in fully educated. We all know that, don't we? Okay. Okay, this one's really the last one.
Is that time free at the point of death and it makes you
birth? Is there a what?
A time frame.
Okay, well, they say that within 49 days, you know, from the time of leaving one life, you're born in the next. Why it's 49 and not 48 or 50, I have no idea. Okay? But this is just what they say. And it can also be shorter. Sometimes it's 1 or 2 days or a week or 10 days or...